Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider.
What are you saying, Hayes?
I think it's – who's that a compliment for or a shot at more? You or the O-Dog?
It's probably a shot more at O-Dog, I would say.
I don't know, man.
But, I don't know.
I meant that as a compliment because he slid right in there in the middle spot.
I sat beside Duffy, and then beside Duffy was O-Dog at the game the other night in the press box. That was worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
We've heard about him.
We've heard and witnessed it. So Duffy had the secret cam going and sent it to a few of us. It is worth the price of admission.
Passion.
Passion was there.
I can't confirm or deny, but a couple of the old-school journalist types up there, they don't love the cheering in the press box.
No, that would usually get you discarded, but in this case, former Leaf, honest about his intentions. And
exactly.
By the way, former Leaf, who's as hard on them when he's not happy, is any journalist. So,
exactly. You know. Listen, the team's going to play the game. And we talk about it. We tee it up and we discuss it and we break it down based on what happens.
If a lot of the journalists want to change the way hockey's played, maybe O can change the way the journalists look at how the press box should be.
That's a pretty good point. I don't know why we're grilling you as if you have to represent.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even close to being a good point. But
no, but you are.
I'll make sure to bring it up at the next PHWA meeting that we have in the Stanley Cup final.
But you are part of it. That's what I'm saying. The old school would frown on the passion because you're supposed to be non-biased. Technically, is that what it is?
Well, yeah, you're a neutral observer.
But I've
ended up there honestly because I just don't care who wins. But that's more about 25 years on the beat. That's taken
I would have
the will
a hard time not saying a lot of the reporters that cover their local beat aren't biased towards the team. They're around the guys so much.
They are, man. It's not humanly possible not to have some sort of like an affinity for the team.
Sure, you get to know the players.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always say, and this is why, you know, this is a bit the cynic in me, but I always say when you're covering a team, and I've never covered a team per se, I'm more of an NHL guy, but you either want the team you cover to be a true Stanley Cup contender or a complete 18-wheeler mess.
Right.
And nothing in between.
Because
the worst possible story is when nothing happens and you're 500 every year. You need calamity or you need this team actually has a chance. So you need excitement or mayhem. Same as I would think if you were hosting a certain radio show.
Or if you were on the panel for Montreal Canadian games all year where they were literally right down the middle. Nothing interesting ever happened.
But at least they were in the fight to our last game, which I greatly appreciated.
I guess you're right.
Could have gone a lot worse.
Anyway, what's the biggest surprise for you in this series through three games?
You know, I wrote this the other night after the game, and it was my first game in the series. I watched the other two on TV while I was in Tampa, but I was struck in the rink at how much Boston was chasing the game from the Leafs. I'd just never seen that before between these two teams. And, you know, I know in game two it went more Boston's way from what I could tell, but my point is the Leafs are playing to their strength. You know, I talked to a couple of coaches before the playoffs about this, and he said the only way the Leafs can win is if they use their strength, which is their forward depth and speed, and keep Boston hemmed in almost the entire series. That happened the other night. It actually was still a close game because when the Leafs do break down, the Bruins get a good look. But the Leafs' forecheck right now is quite alarming to the Bruins. I talked to a couple of Bruins players today who said there's no question that the points of emphasis tonight is to be hard on Toronto's skill.
Yeah.
Okay, back to what the game two was for them. And number two, to slow down the Leafs' forecheckers. Patrice Bergeron the other night said to me on the record, we need to get in front of them. We need to legally slow them down. We can't let the Leafs get at our D the way that they did in game three.
One thing
legally.
But to me, that would be clogging the neutral zone because the Leafs generate so much speed through the neutral zone, stretch passes. Easier said than done. But when you have guys like Bergeron who are aware of it, certainly they are going to cheat towards it as far now, again, the counterpunch. If you realize that's happening, you have to have a reaction or be in front of it if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. If you see something is being wedged away, you can look at it and then go the complete opposite. That is the game within the game, and that's the adaptation to what's being done to you and what you can hand back to them. So I think that's where the Leafs have an opportunity is you're going to sell something. Maybe you go in a different direction. It's still speed, it's still skill, but different looks.
The chess game all series long, you're right. And one thing I found intriguing, I don't know what you guys think, guys, but a Bruins player told me this morning, we were off the records, I'm not going to name him, but he said, in looking at a lot of the video, he was struck by one thing in particular, that when a forecheck is that aggressive, as the Leafs have been so far in this series, usually there's a breakdown in structure on the second layer. Yeah. In other words, if you can still make a pass through that, you should be on your way. He said what has surprised him so far is the Leafs structure has held up behind it on the second wave as well, which I'm going to be as blunt as I can here. I don't know that we've said that much of the year for the Leafs.
No, we haven't. No.
So,
but a lot of that is the responsibility of the centerman, usually if the wingers are the first guys in.
Right.
And the centerman has done a great job of supporting the play.
Yeah.
And that's Tavares, that's Matthews, that's Nylander who's going to have to do that. That's the GOAT who Babs was raving about. Like this, the GOAT is a...
He's a winner, man. Frederic Gauthier
talked to him
wins.
This morning. He's got a big smile. He's enjoying this. And this is a lot of fun. A lot of the Montreal French-Canadian media is here because the Habs are out, so he's doing daily interviews with
really?
Networks.
Wow.
And he's
hero,
got a thing going, and it's
just
awesome.
A hero.
Is
yeah.
he the only French-speaking player on the Leafs? I mean, I'm putting you on the spot. Is
yes.
There?
Yes. Basically, Freddie and I are the only people in... In Leafland, that
well, Babcock thinks he can speak French, doesn't he?
Well,
went
he went
McGill.
To McGill. He went
I know,
to McGill.
But I have a bunch of buddies that went to McGill. They can't say hello in French.
The Leafs, all the years I've lived here since 1995. I've not had a lot of big Quebec guys. And Félix Potvin for a long time was the only one, and then Yannick Perreault.
Yeah,
it's what can I say? You guys don't like us,
I guess.
Yeah,
man.
That's what it is.
I don't know what happened there. the Habs are always trading our guys. PK's from Toronto. He had to go, apparently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that's interesting that type of insight from the Bruins.
And respect is what it sounds like.
It is. It's respect because I think in Game 1 and Game 3, the Leafs did do a very good job of forechecking too. Yeah. It's not like they were going in soft and playing a trap.
No,
they weren't giving you freedom necessarily behind the dots. I thought they did a very good job of pressuring the Bruins in Game 1 and Game 3. But if for whatever reason the forecheck broke down, they were there in support. That did not happen in Game 2. You know, it got ugly for them in Game 2. The puck was in their own end, really, the whole first 20 minutes.
And that was a point of emphasis from on the Bruins this morning, who said, back to being hard on their skill.
Yeah.
You read into what hard on their skill means, but I think they want a bit of Game 2 to come back. I'll tell you something else, guys. I had a very knowing look from a couple of Bruins players this morning when I said, are there any parallels you can draw from the way Columbus slowed down the Tampa Bay Lightning in their transition? And the answer was, yep.
Yeah, that's fair, but here's the thing. You can say it. Executing it is a lot different, and doing it within the rules. That's the one thing. Like, if the Leafs skate and the Bruins, because I've said this all along, the Bruins aren't snails. Everyone
they've got
looks,
a ton of talent. I mean, we're not talking about a bunch of grinders here.
Everyone looks at the Bruins and sees Chara. I get that. And you see Backes, who's older and not fleet of foot. But they've got some speedsters, too. But they don't play that way. Toronto allows, they play the north-south and allows the stretch game. So that's why it ups their pace. They still have to play within the rules. And that's where the Leafs can, if they want to be slowed down, maybe they draw a penalty, too, the Leafs. And that you go
well,
on the
here
power
we go
play
again. Score. I mean, that's the narrative of the series.
Two power play goals the other night. That was a difference. I mean,
right.
I thought, you know, the Leafs deserved to win, but they scored two power play goals when they needed to do that.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Columbus was 5-for-10 in the series against Tampa, were they not?
And they were
and
perfect
and guess
on the penalty kill.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, number one power play in the NHL.
Feather.
Six power play opportunities in the series. It wasn't very good, but they also didn't get many looks at it. And I'm not... Yeah. You draw your own conclusion from what you think of that total, but it's obviously lower than what they're used to during the regular season.
Pierre LeBrun, a hockey insider. I mean, what is going on in the world when the big, bad Boston Bruins, who have all the confidence in the world, and they should, you know, all of their veterans won a cup, went to a cup final, and they're sitting here saying, yeah, Columbus is going to show us the light. Columbus is the team that we have to mimic.
To be fair, I was the one suggesting it, and they agree that there's some parallels there. It's not like they're going out of their way to make that point, but my point was just that the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Toronto Maple Leafs, for me, are the two teams in the East that have the higher pace transition game in the East, those two teams, right?
Yeah. I think the most talent in the East.
I think Kyle Dubas and Julian Breezeboe share a lot of philosophies in how teams should be built, and my point is Columbus within what they felt were the rules.
Yep.
John Tortorella, master game plan, slowed them down, frustrated them.
Yep.
And that's what the Bruins did in Game 2 against Toronto. That's where I'm saying the parallel is there.
Well,
it's an incredibly strange time right now in the NHL playoffs. We always talk about parity, and I think sometimes we talk about it because we want to convince ourselves of it in the media. Tampa's out. Pittsburgh's out. San Jose's on the ropes. Calgary is down to the eighth seed. It's happening. I mean, we're literally at the stage more than ever in the salary cap era where I don't know where you can sit down and confidently say, I'm gonna bet my entire life savings on one particular series. You can't.
No, you're right.
Here, doesn't it shine a light on the importance of making the playoffs?
Is it a good thing, though, for the league? I think there's got to be a balance. I don't think this is healthy every single year.
You're right.
At some point you want not a dynasty team. You don't need a team to win four or five or anything like that over a 5-year period. But when you've got a 62-win team getting swept in the first round, that's not good for the NHL.
It's embarrassing, actually. It's embarrassing.
I think it's probably confusing. You know, I worked at ESPN for many years, and there are always. Playoff fans that come on board this time of year there that aren't there during the year, so they're trying to catch up, and it would be confusing, I think, for a lot of once-a-year fans to come into this league and say, how does a 62-win team get swept? I mean, I'm not casting any, you know, the NBA obviously is doing things that puts it in a way higher spot than the NHL, but I'm telling you right now, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, if you win 62 games in the NBA, is there any possible chance that you're out in the first round?
No, I don't see it. And if it is, it's like once every decade it happens.
Right.
You know, like an 8 seed, just they don't beat 1 seeds. They don't.
Yeah.
Like, it just never happens. It's like the tournament, really. It's like March Madness.
Right.
You know, 1 versus 16, you know what the outcome is. Pencil it in, move them on. And I think there should be a balance. I don't want predictable playoffs.
No.
I don't want to see, like, okay, Golden State, they're going to win 12 straight, and we'll see you in the final. I don't think that's good for business necessarily
Which
either.
It's been happening at times.
It has, absolutely. But there's got to be – now, you can't control it. You can't put rules in to avoid this. There's nothing you can do. You got to go play the game.
This is why you play the games. And that's – you know, you say it, and it's such a terrible cliche, but it's true. Like, I don't think Tampa went into that series going, okay – Columbus, give me the four games, and we're just going to move on here.
No. They were. I can tell you, I was there.
Right.
There was concern that they had drawn a heck of a team. I'm telling you, legitimately, did not take the Blue Jackets lightly at all.
But the Blue Jackets were a good team that ended up in a wild card spot.
It should have been higher in the standings.
But it happened that way. It was a bad draw for them.
But you win 62 games. I said to Hayes the other night, you win 62 games. I don't care how good the first round team you're playing. You got to win.
Well, and you can't tell me they weren't cocky at 3-0 in the first period. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't believe for a second they didn't walk into the room saying,
and I'm
3-0, it's over.
I'm in the ring that night, and Kucherov has a wide-open net, and Bobrovsky makes the save of the series early in the second period, and I remember thinking, if that goes in and it's 4-0,
they're done.
They pull Bobrovsky, Tortorella and Bobrovsky at war again.
Yep,
the Columbus psyche's broken right off the hop. Instead, Bobrovsky makes that miracle save, and then bang. And I tell you, it's a really bad look on the Lightning that their core players came as unglued as easily as they did. I mean,
that's
can talk about the rule book and then what's fair and not fair and everything else. At the end of the day, when adversity hit, Kucherov in particular, the guy that in June is going up to accept the MVP award.
Yeah. He is
the guy, the first guy to lose his cool in that series.
Right. Yeah. And you talk about putting a shield up. Pittsburgh Penguins, no one's talking about them today. They got swept and dummied, too. They've won 3 cups. Tampa hasn't won a thing.
Because no one picked them to win the cup.
Well, but still, Sidney Crosby's out in the first round on a sweep for a team that was brutal a year ago and lost their franchise player.
Yeah.
Like, if Tampa's if Tampa's still playing or they sweep Columbus, it's all Pittsburgh, what happened, and doom and gloom, where are they going as a franchise.
I mean, that's a storyline. It is a storyline.
But no one's talking about it because Tampa's
today.
A sexier one.
It is. Yeah. You're right.
All right, Pierre. Good seeing you, buddy. Thank you.
All
for
right,
doing
that's
this.
It. Are you guys signing autographs later?
Oh, we got Wendell Clark coming in, so we immediately become nobodies.
Yeah,
Wendell's
exactly.
coming in.
And it got cold in here.
It's real cold. Is it Porcupine Plains?
Cold. I don't know. I don't think so. Wendell could be in a T-shirt and shorts here. He'd be fine.
This is Saskatchewan
in
July.
Grit and determination. Yes.
Yeah. We're going to get Wendell in here. Thank you, buddy. Good seeing you.
All right, boys.
Pierre Lebonner, Hockey Insider.